Hello, it's Friday, December 2nd, and you're listening to Wing Radio. I'm Lisa Giuliani.
And I'm Victor Thorne. Welcome to Wing Radio. Thank God it's Friday.
No kidding.
It through another week here. Cold back here in Pennsylvania, real cold. But at least we're moving into the weekend. So on today's show, we have Mr. Adam Gorightly, who we've interviewed before, and I've read just about everything Adam has ever written, I think. He's the author of a book called The Shadow Over Santa Susana, which is still the best book ever written about Charles Manson.
Yep.
He's also the author of The Prankster and the Conspiracy, Death Cults, and just released is a book called The Beast of Adam Gorightly, Collective Rantings from 1992 to the Present. And if you want more information about this book, go to the Wing TV homepage. There's a review of it. And in this book, I say that if I was ever exiled to a remote island and I could only take the books of 10 different authors, one of them would definitely be Adam Gorightly. That's how good he is. So we'd like to welcome Mr. Adam Gorightly to Wing TV.
Hi,
how you doing, Adam?
Hi, Victor and Lisa. Thanks for having me again.
It's
a pleasure.
Great to have you on. Now, before we get started, tell everybody how they can not only find your latest book, but also your website and your other books.
The easiest one-stop shopping place to get all the books is to go to my website, adamgorightly.com.
Okay.
And all the books are there, and you can also get signed copies as well. But the books are also available at Amazon.com and Barnes & Noble and all the usual outlets.
All right, very good. We'll give that at the end of the show again, too. It's adamgorightly.com. Now, in this review, Adam, I wrote that this may surprise you, but my favorite chapter in the whole book was your overview of Stanley Kubrick's latest film called Eyes Wide Shut. And in this review, you show that there is definitely a link between MKUltra, the Monarch slave programming, multiple personality disorder, and also secret societies. Expand upon that a little bit.
Well, it's interesting, out of all the essays in that book, that seems to be the most popular. It resonates with people. I continue to get feedback. The article several years old now, but I continue to get positive feedback. It really touched the nerve with a lot of people. And previously to seeing Eyes Wide Shut, I'd done a lot of research on Monarch sex slave programming. And the first time I watched Eyes Wide Shut, I was just blown away. I started seeing all of this allegorical symbolism that alluded to mind control with references to the Wizard of Oz, for instance, that you see throughout the movie. That's programming matrix often used in Monarch programming. And so there was a lot of allusions throughout that movie. They refer to the women as models, which seemed to me to be a reference to the first presidential model, the first wide-known mind control victim, Candy Jones. So there was a lot of stuff like that I found in the movie.
Adam, do you think Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman grasped what was going on with this movie, and what role do you think Cruise's involvement with Scientology played in it?
You know, I'm not. They might have just been used in this movie and not had any clue at all. It's hard to say. It's curious that, you know, there's a connections with Scientology. I've never been too impressed with Tom Cruise's intellect, so, you know, possibly they're misused as unwitting patsies.
Yeah, exactly. Now, last week, Adam, was the 42nd anniversary of the John Kennedy assassination, and oddly, most everybody who was of age when that happened knew where they were on that tragic day, except for Richard Nixon and George Bush Sr. Both of them don't claim to remember where they were, yet we know pretty certainly that both of them were in Dallas the day that John Kennedy was shot. How do you think George Bush Sr. fits into the picture of the Kennedy assassination?
Well, George Bush Sr. was pretty intimately involved prior to the Kennedy assassination with the CIA and the overthrow started looking into these, revelations or allegations about George Bush being a CIA agent in the early 60s, they started coming across information that there was indeed a George Bush when he was questioned later after becoming the CIA director. The agency claimed that it was just some low-level clerk, and all that information was covered up. But for those of us in the know, or those of us who should know better, George Bush certainly had some role to play in conspiratorial politics going way back,
mm-hmm.
way back to the time of his pappy Prescott Bush, who was one of the early members of Skull and Bones.
Okay, over the past several decades, the Bush family's been involved in a lot of dirty business, like money laundering for the Nazis, CIA mafia drug running via their offshore oil rigs, at least a peripheral role in the JFK assassination, MENA drug running with Bill Clinton, Iran-Contra illegal arms sales, and of course 9/11. So my question to you is, how do you see the Bush family? Do you see them as being part of some huge government organized crime syndicate or some other way?
Hey, the hits just keep on coming, don't they?
Yeah.
I see it as you basically have a bloodline of some royal families in this country that all seem to be connected. There's no such thing as a really free election anymore, as we've seen in the past few years with all the mischief that's been going on in the presidential election. So, what we're looking here is a long-term, devised, orchestrated means of bringing about the New World Order, and, whether they're, the Bush family and Clinton and all the past administrations are actually puppets of somebody behind the scenes, or actually the chief instigators of bringing about the New World Order, one way or another, they're helping bring it about, whether they're puppets or not.
Yeah. Now, you have another article that is very interesting. It was entitled When Camelot Rocked, and it was about John Kennedy's brief stay in the White House. Tell us, Adam, about how John Kennedy was tuned in and turned on.
The essay is called When Camelot Grooved.
Oh, Grooved, okay.
In the early 60s, when Timothy Leary had started all his explorations into LSD at Harvard, he met a lady by the name of Mary Pinchot Meyer, whose husband was a pretty heavy hitter in the CIA. And Mary Pinchot Meyer, also it turned out, was a lover of JFK. And according to Timothy Leary and other sources as well, she indeed turned JFK onto LSD, and she was trying to orchestrate her own New World Order, but one that was more tuned on and turned in, turned on, and whatever the very saying was. So she was trying to do prior to, what the Beatles and other folks involved in the counterculture movement, the psychedelic movement. She was trying to get JFK moving in that direction, and who knows, that might have been part of the reason that led up to his untimely undoing.
Hmm. If we had to name a godmother of conspiracy research, Adam, it would be Mae Brussel. What do you think were her greatest contributions to this field?
Initially, her research into the JFK assassination, she was really the first one to dive into all the 26 volumes of the Warren Commission report with a fine-tooth comb and start to take it apart and point it out all the inconsistencies. At a very early point, afterwards, she saw a lot of the same players who had been involved in the Kennedy assassination and the sections out, you know, way before a lot of the actual revelations came to light. So yeah, some of her most important work went on there in the earlier, the 60s and 70s. But, you know, she continued up until the time of her death, very heavily involved in conspiratorial research. And towards the end, she was looking into the connection with satanic cults and their connections with the military and those type of things. And some suggest that this research ultimately led to her death, which was quite curious. She died of the fast-acting cancer.
Yeah, she's very...
87 or so.
Yeah, she's very, very sorely missed. Now, let's turn our attention to Charles Manson. And I think one of the biggest surprises for most people is that when they look at Helter Skelter, at those slayings, they think that this was just some kind of random event. But you show the deep Manson family Hollywood connections and even mention some names. Elvis Presley, Jane Fonda, the Beach Boys, Nancy Sinatra, Yul Brynner, and Peter Sellers. Expand a little bit more about how deeply the Manson family was involved with Hollywood.
Well, they were deeply entrenched there, and I think ultimately, you know, that was looks to be one of the better theories to explain what happened, that Manson felt he had been burned by the record industry, and murders he committed were at the house of Terry Melcher, a big-time producer, record producer, produced The Birds and groups like Monkees. He actually owned the house where the Polanski murders took place. He wasn't living there at the time, but it appears Manson was leaving him a message. So, you know, it's well known that Manson lived at Dennis Wilson's house. And pretty tight with members of the Beach Boys, and Dennis Wilson promoted Manson's career and helped him record some demos, and you know, Manson and the family were a whole part of that Topanga Laurel Canyon scene, and rubbed elbows with the likes of some of those folks he mentioned, as well as Mama Cass and John Phillips, and I think one of the main issues behind the Manson family murders is that they tried to put the matter to rest real quickly with the whole Helter Skelter theory, to kind of try to cover up and hush up the Manson family's, you know, close ties to that Hollywood and music scene.
Okay. Regarding Manson, you've analyzed his connections or links to people like Aleister Crowley, Kenneth Anger, Anton LaVey, and to things like Scientology and the Process Church of the Final Judgment. How do you tie all of these together?
Easy question.
It takes a hell of a lot of work, but they put themselves together. I started looking into these things. One of the Manson murderers was Bobby Beausoleil. You start looking at his connections. Even prior to meeting up with Manson and his gang, he was being groomed to star in a movie called Lucifer Rising that was directed by Kenneth Anger, who was a prodigy of Aleister Crowley. Also co-starring in that movie was none other than Anton LaVey. Connections there dating back to when Anton LaVey was running a strip show in Hollywood, once again several years before the Manson family murders, and one of the performers there in the role of vampire was none other than Susan Atkins, who later became one of the principal murderesses.
So they all really do fit together. It's very bizarre.
The more you look at it, the more connections you see. It just goes on and on. It's a strange, twisted hornet's nest. The deeper you get into it, the uglier it gets.
Yeah.
Same as 9/11.
Yeah. Now, one of my favorite writers, if not my favorite writer of all time, was Jack Kerouac. And you point out that he has one science fiction story that he wrote during his life called City, City, City. How do you compare this story to the works of people like Philip K. Dick, Robert Anton Wilson, or some of the other dystopian writers like Orwell or Huxley?
I would describe it as Ray Bradbury on acid. It's a wonderful story, and I was surprised to stumble across it. Originally, it started out as a book project that Kerouac was working with in collaboration with William Burroughs on, and for some reason they never got around to actually working on the book together, but Kerouac took those conversations with Burroughs and crafted this short story, which is a fine piece of science fiction. Yeah, and I put it up there with any of the great writers, the Philip K. Dicks, and also on par with Huxley's books and 1984 by Orwell.
Aleister Crowley has figured very prominently in the history of rock and roll. He's wielded a huge influence, and even to this day still does, even though he's been dead for over 60 years. How would you describe his influence over musicians like Jimmy Page and Ozzy Osbourne?
Well, the influence speaks for itself. Osbourne had a very popular tune, Mr. Crowley, he called him, and actually means Crowley. Page, you know, once again, you look into the connections with the Manson family. Page was hooked up with Kenneth Anger, and he, who was, once again, Crowley's prodigy, and he wrote a soundtrack for one of the versions of Lucifer Rising. Page went on to actually buy the, purchase the castle that Crowley had lived in Boldskin near Loch Ness Lake, where the legend of the Loch Ness monster abounds. You look on the probably the most influential album in rock history, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. The group of people you see on the cover is none other than our man Crowley.
That's right. That's very right. Now, we interviewed you before about your book called The Prankster and a Conspiracy, where you focus on a guy named Kerry Thornley and his role as a prankster and also as one of the founding members of the Discordian Society. To those people who aren't familiar with this group, what did they represent?
They represented a mindfuck of sorts. To throw a wrench into consensus reality and screw with the establishment, and in the process try to illuminate people is how I could describe the Discordian society in a nutshell. And you know, among the early members of the group we had, of course, Thornley and Grady Keel, but also Robert Anton Wilson and Bob Shea, the authors of the really fabulous, wonderful, inspiring, strangely odd book, series of books, the Illuminatus Trilogy. And they were heavily influenced by the Discordian Society. You can read about certain aspects of the Discordian Society in that book. Basically started as a in-joke between Kerry Thornley and Grady Keel, and they were just young lads in high school, and over the years became a counterculture phenomenon. It still lives on to this day. If you do a simple web search on Discordian, those odd seeds they planted way back when have continued to sprout in very colorful and humorous ways.
In the beginning of your book, you have some stories that are very reminiscent of Donna Cossey's book called Kooks, where you wrote about characters like the Rainbow Man and roller derby star Psycho Ronnie Raines. Tell us a story about Doc Ellis and LSD.
The incident happened, I don't have the exact date, but it was around 1970, and Doc Ellis pitched for the Pittsburgh Pirates, and so he was at home one day with his girlfriend, and they dropped some acid and were starting to come onto it. And his girlfriend opened the newspaper There's a twi-night doubleheader going on, so he decided to, instead of calling in sick, hop aboard a commuter flight, and I believe the game was in L.A., and proceeded to pitch probably the first and last no-hitter under the influence of LSD.
Yeah, and see, I remember that, Adam, because when I was a kid, the Pirates were like my greatest influence in the world. And I remember watching Doc Ellis pitch all the time on TV, but I never knew his no-hitter until years later was under the influence of LSD. And I heard he was describing it once that he was so in tune with the catcher's mitt that he couldn't do any wrong. It was pretty fascinating.
I don't think he was totally in tune. He was, so much of baseball depends on, they keep books on all these different players, and he entered a totally different zone, so the way he pitched was totally out of the normal. I think he walked 11 batters that day and hit a few, and I think he just probably had them spooked out. He had the bases loaded several times, but nobody ever scored, so he was, I don't think, you know, that day he totally unwrote the book on himself and just blew everybody away, including.
Yeah, that's a great, great story. Now, before we go today, Adam, once again, give your website address.
AdamGoRightly.com.
Yeah, and we can find all the books there. And one last question. What's old Charlie up to these days? Still in prison, still alive. Do you have any, did you get any reports on what he's doing these days?
Not recently.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Cause I've moved on to other things. Haven't heard any... Recent reports on our man, but I'm sure he's still up to interesting things, whether he's there making little scorpions out of the threads from his socks or composing music or whatever. He'll keep on keeping on until finally croaks. He's getting up there in years.
He is.
They're never going to let him out.
So
they're never going to let him out, Adam.
No, no.
Oh, no, no. It's of a political hot potato. Hell, I haven't even considered, the other gals keep coming up for parole over the years. And, through interviews, some of these ladies, they sound like they've at least appeared to have been rehabilitated to a certain extent. They say all the right things, but, it's such a...
Yeah.
Critical hot potato. Heck, I don't think any of them would get out of prison.
Well, Adam, before we jump out here, what are you working on next? What are you going to send our way next?
Working on a piece which would either be a long article or a short book on the works of James Shelby Downard.
Uh-huh.
And his revelation of the method.
Right, yep. Yeah, Michael... what's his name? He wrote the book about secret societies. Michael A. Hoffman.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, he and Hoffman collaborated together on the seminal article, King Kill 33, which
yep.
implicated Freemasonry and the assassination of John F. Kennedy.
Well, we look forward to that.
Yeah, definitely. And fired our way. That's Adam Go Rightly. He can be found at AdamGoRightly.com. And,
remember, you can't go wrong if you go
rightly. Well, Adam, thanks for being on the show today, and stay in touch, okay?
Okay, thanks, guys.
Take care.
We'll be back again on Monday. We have a lot of good stuff, really, not only planned for next week, for the whole month of
Adam's
December.
Wild.
Yeah, I just love reading his work. And, we got good stuff coming up next week. So until then, there's so much stuff going on in this alternative media that we have to, start taking notes already for Monday what we're going to talk about. There's so much. So tune in. Until then, keep your eyes open because there's a lot going on.
See you then, everyone.